Good evening, and welcome to the Black Fist Podcast. I am your host, Angola Black. The Black Fist Podcast is a show where we will look at news stories from the world of sports and entertainment or political news, and we will discuss them through the lens of a black martial artist. The Black Fist Podcast is brought to you by Righteous Science Martial Arts. Martial art made for the hood, by the hood. For more information, please reach out to them. rsma.info@gmail.com. Today's first story comes to us from the world of the NFL, sports, and entertainment, as Jay-Z was in the news this week with an announcement that he has formed a partnership with the NFL. The details of the partnership at this present time are somewhat murky. Not very clear, but evidently some people feel as though this partnership will be greatly beneficial to the black community in particular, but non-white communities. I have heard it reported that Jay-Z's partnership will include empowering Jay-Z to be a consultant and have a powerful hand in picking out the entertainment and music content for the NFL's brand. So with that, he would have influence, supposedly, when it comes time to picking out the entertainers for some of their signature or marquee events, most notably the Super Bowl halftime show, which I think most people know Beyonce, his wife, once performed in, and Jay-Z reportedly once turned down an offer to perform at the Super Bowl halftime, and allegedly this was in response to Colin Kaepernick and the fact that he has been held without a job in the NFL for the last few years. Well, didn't take long, but Jay-Z definitely did a 180 on that and is no longer boycotting the NFL, but is in fact partnering with them, much to the dismay of many, while again others would say that it's a good move. For Jay-Z's perspective, maybe he thinks that he is opening up doors for future generations of black males to also hold positions as consultants for entertainment content for the brand. I'm not sure. Someone would have to ask him if that's what he thinks he's doing. I once heard one commentator on ESPN, I believe it was Stephen A. Smith, say that through the Players Coalition and his partnership with Jay-Z, they have earmarked $89 million. And apparently, one of Jay-Z's job functions will be to help divvy up the money that is earmarked by the NFL that is supposed to go to initiatives, and I'm going to use their terminology, initiatives which deal with social justice reform and social justice initiatives and racial equality. Now, I don't honestly know what any of that means. I mean, I don't know what any of that means. And then also, I'm going to need to see some receipts. Somebody will have to show me exactly where that $89 million is going to. If NFL owners are giving up $89 million collectively, and handing it over to Jay-Z to decide what to do with it, I'm going to be skeptical. And this is not because I'm going to trash Jay-Z. I'm not going to do that. But I'm going to be skeptical. And I'll share with you why I'm skeptical by laying out a few things that I do know and kind of recapping the series of events that have led to this. But of course, anyone is free to decide on their own how they want to view it. So first, let's start with the NFL. The NFL is a brand that I do not trust. The NFL is a brand, the NFL league started in 1920. So we're going on to 2020, and that'll be 100 years for this football league. They integrated with black players in 1946. That is the earliest integration that history has recorded. They started to sign a few black players here and there in their leagues. And this, in my view, was not as a result of someone trying to be a good person and saying, hey, everyone should have a chance to play this game and everyone should be included and be allowed to entertain. No, from what I can gather, the NFL started to sign black players because black players seem to be gifted athletes in many cases. And so the NFL said, hey, we could win some games by putting some of these black people on our teams. And so slowly but surely, they started to integrate black players into the fold. Now, this did not come without a lot of problems for the black players that were ushered in. They faced discrimination, hate mail, and we're talking about 1946. So as you can imagine, there were still segregated football facilities, segregated hotels, segregated restaurants, segregated modes of travel. So can you imagine that being a black player? Let's say one of the brothers, his name was Woody. I forgot his last name. Unfortunately, it escapes me. But he played for the Los Angeles Rams in 1946. And so in 1946, I'm sure there were times where he wasn't allowed to eat in the same restaurant as his teammates. He probably had to go in through the service entrance whenever they stayed at a hotel, so on and so forth. And these things continued up through the 60s. And finally, due to the Civil Rights Act, some things started to change. But the NFL, even until recent times, has really been resistant in certain areas. So, for example, there's been a large documented historical resistance to allowing black people into positions of leadership in a field of sport and play. What that means is, so for football, you won't have very many black quarterbacks. There was a time when black people were just absolutely not allowed to play quarterback at all. And players who played quarterback in college, black players would often be forced to switch positions when they got to the NFL, play wide receiver, defensive back, running back, or what have you, anything but quarterback. And this continued really all the way up until, honestly, the late 90s. I can think of one draft class in particular that had three black quarterbacks taken, and I think it was, if I can remember correctly, Dante Culpepper, Donovan McNabb, and maybe one other player. I think it was maybe Akili Smith. I can't quite recall. But since that time, there have been more black quarterbacks playing in the NFL. But you will still see patterns if you look closely enough, where if a black player struggles for a week or two, he's going to be out and he will be replaced. Meanwhile, his white counterparts playing quarterback often get a chance to struggle and keep struggling, and they're not replaced nearly as quickly. If a black player gets hurt, black quarterback gets hurt, he often isn't given the same opportunity or time to heal before his job is gone. A good case of this, where you could see this has happened, is Teddy Bridgewater, for example. Very good player, great college player, came to the NFL, started as a young rookie, played very well through his first couple of years, and he was hurt. And then before he was able to heal and come back, the Minnesota Vikings signed someone else for his job, got rid of him. The same thing happened with Robert Griffin III. He was never really allowed to heal properly. The coaching staff who originally drafted him, actually was forced to draft him, did not want him. He is now a backup somewhere else. So there's just a pattern of players who, those are some recent examples I can think of, who lost their jobs, mainly due to injury, but also for other reasons. So the NFL has resisted having black quarterbacks. Now there are many coming in, and we'll see if this trend continues. But you can go further up to head coaches. There aren't very many black head coaches, and by my count this year, I can think of maybe three off the top of my head, two. And in fact, the NFL had instituted several years ago a program they call the Rooney Rule. And the Rooney Rule is specifically set up so that when teams are hiring for a head coach, they actually have to interview black candidates, because there has been a very slow process of integrating the head coach ranks of NFL football. And there are many qualified candidates who get passed over, don't get the shot. Meanwhile, coaches who have failed in one spot are sometimes recycled to take on other jobs, even though they may not be as deserving as some of the candidates who they are beating out for the positions. Who's an example I can think of? Well, how about Shermer, the coach of New York Giants? He's basically got a 30% winning percentage. He's lost almost a third. I mean, he's only won about a third of his NFL games as a head coach, yet he's allowed to continue. I know Eli Manning is his quarterback. He's a guy who's won Super Bowls, but he's clearly a shell of himself. He's not nearly as effective as he once was 3 or 4 years ago. And the last 2 years have been dreadful, yet he's allowed to continue starting for that team. And then if you go up the ranks even further to general managers, you'll have very few black general managers in the NFL, and no, I mean zero, black owners. So the NFL as a brand has not embraced black people, outside of the fact that they want to put the ball in your hand and have you run around with it. But when it comes to positions of leadership, the NFL is not on your side. And the NFL definitely does not want you using their brand, their logo, for any sort of protest, as a platform for any kind of protest, in particular with so-called racial equality or racial inequality issues. So the NFL, major corporation, interested in the dollars, 68% of its players are black players. Yet, there's no health insurance for players once they're retired. The NFL tried to cover up their issue with concussions and the disease known as CTE. Yet, many non-white players have died or committed suicide, and when their skull is opened up and their brain examined by autopsy, we find CTE, this disease that runs you crazy from repeated trauma in the head. And I could just rattle off a whole list of players who I think may be suffering from this, and I think this would count for a lot of the erratic behavior you see out of NFL players. But definitely, for sure, people like Junior Seau, a linebacker, a non-white male linebacker, deceased, was found with CTE, and he killed himself. And Harry Carson, Super Bowl winning linebacker for the New York Giants, also took his own life. It's found that he suffered from CTE. And so when you find players, you know, beating up people in bars or beating up their girlfriends or arrested for DUI and belligerent with, you know, bystanders and throwing people through windows, I think a lot of this can be traced back to, you know, the repeated head traumas, the cocktails of pain medications that these players are told to pound down on a weekly basis just to get ready to play. And then the culture within the locker room and the sport and play arena, which is basically, you know, telling you, be violent, be as violent as possible, and go out there and be a crazed dog. I think that's a powder keg of a recipe which affects people. So the NFL, oh, and let me throw this out there too. I think the NFL also does a great job of, or does a good job of, insulating the players to the point where they are in a bubble. A bubble that is not connected to the real world. And so these people are lavished with high paychecks. They're lavished with the attention of females. Not just everyday females that are in the world, but I think that the NFL and its network sometimes reaches out and pays females to attend to the players. In different capacities. This is speculative, but I have been in some circles in the entertainment world where the women who were attending the party were paid to be there, and they were paid to be there to stoke the, how can I put this, stoke the libido of the males in the room. Kind of like exotic dancers or escorts. And I think that these players who roll in these circles, you know, they're in the VIP at the club. They have women sent to them. And they also get access to any kind of drug you want. And again, these are not just pain medication drugs, but also recreational drugs. I think that, along with the constant blows to the head and the violent culture, leads to major, major problems for the players, because most of them are not going to retire rich. Most of them are going to end up owing debt to, you know, different people, mortgages, car payments, ex-wives, legal teams, doctor bills, you name it. And when their playing career is over, where are they going to generate the income to take care of all of those things? Plus, when the career is over, most of them are going to sink into anonymity. Most of them are not going to continue to be famous. So what happens to them then when they no longer have access to female attention or drugs or being Mr. Popular? The NFL doesn't care about any of that. All they want is Sunday in your prime years, or during the years you're approaching your prime, make sure you grab that football and carry it into the end zone. Or make sure you stop that player who's trying to get into the end zone and knock his head off. And that's all we care about. We're the NFL. So I don't see the NFL as being particularly sensitive to the needs of black people or non-white people at all. In fact, I see them merely as another group willing to exploit the pool of black talent that they have at their disposal, or non-white people who are talented that they have at their disposal. That's what I see from the NFL. So automatically, I'm just instantly suspicious of anything the NFL tries to do to make it seem as though they care. Because again, I really don't trust them at all. And besides that, their owners are a bunch of, let's face it, rich white guys. I don't expect them to really give a damn about people like Angola Black or you in the listening audience. But, you know, you can enjoy it and watch it and have some fun with it like most people do. I'm not blaming anyone for watching a little football, but I would caution you. And I'm also not going to tell you you need to view it the way I view it, but I would caution you to be suspicious. Let's talk about Colin Kaepernick a little bit. Colin Kaepernick came into the NFL as a backup playing for the San Francisco 49ers, and that's the team that drafted him. He eventually beat out the starter who was in front of him, Alex Smith. They got rid of him, and he took over as the starter. Now, when Kaepernick took over as the starter, the Niners were a decent team. They became a very good team. They even got to a Super Bowl playing behind Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick set an NFL playoff record in a game he played against the Green Bay Packers, where he threw for X amount of yards, ran for X amount of yards, and it was the first time in NFL history anybody had made a combination of those kind of numbers from the quarterback position, and really had a chance to win the Super Bowl that they played against the Baltimore Ravens. They eventually lost that Super Bowl. There were some very high-profile police killings that took place, and Colin Kaepernick decided that what he was going to do in protest to the black people, unarmed black people being killed by the police, that he was going to kneel during the national anthem. And this touched off a major storm. Colin Kaepernick began to kneel during the anthem. It started to be shown by the news media, and the story exploded. Then next thing you know, you had players across the NFL beginning to kneel for the anthem. Then you had NFL players or NFL owners coming out against the kneeling protest, saying, hey, my guys better not kneel. If you kneel, you're going to be fined. And then you had political pundits jumping in on it, saying that Colin Kaepernick was unpatriotic because he wouldn't stand for the for the anthem. And you had a bunch of people coming at Colin Kaepernick, telling him, you know, what he was doing was wrong, and, you know, he's not a good example for people, and so on and so forth. Colin Kaepernick continued to kneel and did not cave when people were trying to tell him that he needed to stand up. And he articulated himself when they said he was not a patriot and that he was protesting the flag in America. And he was very clear and said, I'm not protesting the flag. I'm not disrespecting the military or anything of that sort. I'm strictly trying to draw attention to police brutality and other matters of this ilk or this type. Colin Kaepernick, his fortunes changed when the Niners began to lose. As we've spoken about before, if you're a black quarterback and you start to lose, you're not going to have a job very long. That's been the pattern in the NFL. And it's happened to some of the great ones. Warren Moon, Randall Cunningham, some guys I can think of who were very, very good players, but when they started to lose, they were out really fast. Same thing happened to Colin Kaepernick. And unfortunately for him, he was never given another opportunity to land on with another team. Many people suspect it was basically the owners agreeing that they weren't going to give him a job because they were upset about his protest. So Colin Kaepernick ended up suing the NFL, accusing them of collusion, saying, hey, you guys are basically working together to keep me out of a job. And he went to court for that. Colin Kaepernick ended up losing his NFL career. He ended up settling against the NFL owners, settling with the NFL's owners for an undisclosed amount. I'm not quite sure how much it is. I've heard someone say $30 million. I've heard someone else say less than that. And I believe he signed a non-disclosure agreement, meaning that he could take the money because he was saying, hey, you guys robbed me of an opportunity to earn the rest of my money based on my NFL career because you robbed me of my NFL career. So as a result, I need to get paid now for the money I could have earned while I was playing in the NFL. And they said, sure, we'll give you X amount of dollars, but you can't talk about this case. You can't talk about us holding you out of the league or any of the evidence that was discovered during your investigation or your team's investigation into whether or not we were colluding against you. So in other words, they told Cap, hey, Cap, sure, we'll give you some money, but you can't talk about anything you found out about us while you were looking into us trying to prove your case. For this, Colin Kaepernick has taken a huge, and I mean a huge, for lack of a better term, backlash. I think that's an appropriate term, actually, in this case, backlash, because slaves were lashed on their backs whenever they tried to do something that the slave master didn't like. So Colin Kaepernick has taken a huge backlash based on the fact that he may have signed a non-disclosure agreement and took money from the NFL. And many people were upset with Colin Kaepernick, saying, oh, well, he's been silent. He doesn't articulate what he wants to do with his movement. He hasn't defined what the next steps or what the action is. All he is doing is complaining about the condition, but not talking about what it's supposed to be that you're supposed to do. So let's move forward a little bit and let's get up to Jay-Z, because this is where the storm really touched off. Jay-Z entering this partnership with the NFL. My first question would be, is Jay-Z someone that I would trust to do anything that's going to be positive for black people? And I'm not going to use this opportunity to blast Jay-Z or call him a sellout or call him names. I don't believe in any of that. But I would say that listening to his music, it's questionable. I mean, a lot of his music centers around, especially his older music, has centered around drug dealing and mistreating black females. So I'm kind of unsure that I would want my children looking at Jay-Z, or my own offspring looking at Jay-Z, as if he is some sort of leader of a movement. When I think of people leading movements who were positive on black people, I think of people like Harriet Tubman. I think of people like Malcolm X. I think of people like Martin Luther King, or Marcus Mosiah Garvey, or even the messenger, Elijah Muhammad, or anybody who has somehow reformed their life and then made sacrifices to ensure or to do their part to try and uplift black people, even at the risk of their own life or at peril or risking their own life or the life of their loved ones. And I just have never seen Jay-Z do anything that I think fits that category or that description. In fact, again, if I'm looking at the Big Pimpin' video, I definitely would not want my offspring to look at this guy and say, oh yeah, he's our leader. And I know many people are going to say, well, wait a minute, Jay-Z didn't say that he wanted to be a leader. But Jay-Z did say, I'm entering this partnership with the NFL. And he made a direct quote about the kneeling of Kaepernick saying, we are past kneeling. I believe we are past kneeling. So in other words, positioning himself as the person who's going to continue the movement from the point that Colin Kaepernick left it, so to speak, at kneeling. Painting Colin Kaepernick as a person who's done nothing but kneel, which is absolutely false. And painting himself as the person who's going to take the next step. And I really have a problem with this for the simple fact that what step are you taking? I know it again has been reported that $89 million was earmarked, but I need to know what it is that you're doing, Mr. Jay-Z. How is this money going to be spent? I mean, picking halftime Super Bowl performers to me is not revolutionary, is not making a positive impact in the black community in any way, shape, or form. Except for those few black people that are actually performing during that time. And hell, that might be more than most people have done for the black community. So again, I'm not going to trash you. I'm not going to trash him for it. But I am going to say that I'm highly suspicious. And also the fact that Jay-Z was highly critical of the NFL for about a year or two during this Colin Kaepernick thing up until now. His explanation was, when you complain and then you're complaining about to the powers that be, I'm going to paraphrase, you complain to the powers that be, and then they come to you and say, hey, you know what? I hear what you're saying. What are we going to do now? And then it's up to you to come up with the solution, which he says that he has. As a matter of fact, this agreement has been touted as if it's really a boon or doing something really great. And I'm going to sit back and take the I'm going to wait and see approach, because I just don't trust the NFL. And I don't think the NFL ownership is stupid. I think that they're smart. I think that many of them are probably guilty of practicing white supremacy. And so I could see how they would pick someone, an entertainer, who has the ears of the youth. And they figure, well, we can get this guy to do X, Y, and Z, and he'll keep people in check. It's almost like a dog and pony show. You show someone over here, something over here, because you want to do something over there. In other words, I show you my left hand because my right hand is up to something. And to me, when you take an entertainer like Jay-Z, the NFL takes an entertainer like Jay-Z and props him up in a position, to me, that's showing you the left hand. And then you need to be wary of where that right hand is. Immediately, instantly. But I'm not going to blame Jay-Z for taking money, because it doesn't say how much money Jay-Z is getting for taking his new position. That has not been announced. I even heard someone say that it's possible that Jay-Z could now get ownership in the NFL. I'm not sure that I buy that or believe that. And if it did happen, I still would be in a position where I'm thinking that doesn't make much of a difference for anything. It certainly doesn't have any bearing on what Colin Kaepernick was trying to do with Eric Reid and other NFL players. I don't see where Jay-Z's partnership with the NFL picking music performers helps further those causes along. And I don't see what it really means when Jay-Z says we are past kneeling. He would need to explain that in depth, what that means, but just from the surface, it sounds as though he's picking up the mantle where Colin Kaepernick left it, and then he's going to do something extra that's going to be even more powerful and impactful. So my thing is, well, Mr. Jay-Z, you know, you have that platform. You have the NFL now. So let's see exactly what you do. And I know many people will call him a sellout and a coon and a this and a that for getting into the bed with the NFL and taking the NFL money, just like people called Kaepernick a sellout and a coon and a this and a that, because he took the NFL money with the settlement to keep his mouth shut and go away. But My retort to all that, calling these people names, is that I just think it's important to realize that these two black males are, although they have more money than I do, they are no different than any other black male who has a job. Meaning almost every black male on the planet who has a job accepts money from white people and white interests. Do you work for Google? Oh, so there's a white person that owns that, made that up, and now he's paying you. Do you work for municipal transit? Oh, so you take money for doing a job. Well, guess what? Almost every black person on earth takes money for doing a job. So just because one person gets more than another or has a fancier title or is more visible, that doesn't mean that they're doing anything incorrect. I mean, after all, where are you supposed to get money to support your family and your offspring? Everybody has to do that on some level, as far as I can tell. Every non-white person in the known universe does this, as far as I can tell. So I'm not going to beat up Kaepernick or Jay-Z for doing this. Now, many NFL players have come out against Jay-Z. Eric Reed is one. He was Colin Kaepernick's teammate. He was out of the NFL for a year during this protest stuff, and then eventually caught back on with the Carolina Panthers, where he plays now. Kenny Stills in the Miami Dolphins, a receiver. They both have come out and said, hey, Jay-Z is basically co-opting this movement. He's attaching his name to this movement after the fact, but he hasn't given up anything. He hasn't sacrificed. And what he's doing with the NFL is not in line with what it is we were protesting, or Colin Kaepernick was protesting. And Colin Kaepernick does not have a job. So we're not happy with Jay-Z about this. And some people have come out and criticized those NFL players for making that stance about Jay-Z. One person I can think of in particular, another non-white male, black male, Stephen A. Smith of ESPN fame, really has gone over the top with his praise for Jay-Z with this partnership. And he has also likewise gone over the top with his criticism of players like Eric Reed and Kenny Stills. Kenny Stills is an interesting story as well, because he plays for the Miami Dolphins. The Miami Dolphins now have a black head coach named Brian Flores. When Kenny Stills, after a preseason game, was asked questions about Jay-Z's partnership with the NFL, Kenny Stills basically said, hey, this guy doesn't represent what it is we were doing when we were protesting with Cap. Jay-Z is basically somebody who, you know, we're not sure we trust him. That's basically what Kenny Stills was saying in so many words. That's what I took out of it. Well, his coach, Brian Flores, got wind of this. And there was a story that came out yesterday, or a day or two ago, a few days ago in the news, that head coach Brian Flores' response to Kenny Stills' post-game interview was, in the next practice, Brian Flores decided he was going to play during practice, during their music, when they play music during practice, he was going to play 8 Jay-Z songs in a row. So a reporter asked Brian Flores about this 8 Jay-Z songs in a row after Kenny Stills made his comments. And the coach went on record saying, this was a challenge to Kenny, because we understand that he's protesting and all of this. I'm paraphrasing, but he hasn't lived up to his billing as a wide receiver. We need him to catch the ball, get open, make the catches, and blah, blah, blah. And he's underperforming. So I played Jay-Z to get his attention and challenge him. This was co-signed by Stephen A. Smith on ESPN. Stephen A. Smith saying that he understood where Brian Flores was coming from, and that, you know, Kenny Stills needs to just basically, he needs to produce if he's going to be, you know, protesting and all this and all that, conflating what Kenny Stills does on the football field to with his stance about equality and police brutality off the field. And I got to tell you, that was hard to stomach. Because basically, if you look at the whole scenario now, we are losing focus on what it was that Colin Kaepernick and other players kneeled for in the beginning. Because he kneeled for, in the beginning, he kneeled for bringing attention to so-called police brutality. Now, as it turns out, we're focusing on Jay-Z and his shiny new deal with the NFL. We're focusing on the NFL players who are firing back at Jay-Z, saying that he's no good, that he's messing it up. And we're focusing now even on the coaches and players who are going in on each other because they stand on different sides of the fence when it comes to Colin Kaepernick's protest. And it goes even further with black sports commentators debating back and forth who's right and who's wrong, Kaepernick, Eric Reed, or Jay-Z. Lost in all of this is that the NFL is still getting away with questionable practices. Highly questionable practices. And that no matter what Jay-Z does or Colin Kaepernick does, Kenny Stills, Brian Flores, or anyone else does, there seems to be no end in sight of white people stopping the practice of racism or of police stopping brutality against unarmed, non-white people, black people. I just don't see it. And I don't see any evidence that any of the people that we've been talking about will have any say-so or any power whatsoever to stop that. And I think that's what has to be kept in focus. We need to focus back on the fact that there are people practicing racism. Some of them have guns and a badge, and we need to keep our eyes sharply trained on them. Not Jay-Z. Jay-Z is an entertainer. His whole career is about distracting you from things that are important. And I'm not saying people should not enjoy music, but let's be real about it. We are in a rat race, and when you turn on your music, it's escapism. You're turning it on so that you can listen to some jams and not be bogged down with all of your problems that you're facing on a daily. Or you're turning it on so you can get some motivation and enjoy your workout. You're distracted 20 minutes, 60 minutes, or whatever it is before you get back to the grind. So I think that this is something that's very important in terms of recognizing the pattern that there's a serious issue, but we're being distracted from the issue. We're given a shiny new toy, a shiny new object. Hey, Jay-Z partnership. Hey, things are getting better. And then the fallout, which is a gladiator event of black people going at each other because they disagree with the other person's method. And I just don't think that it's effective or healthy. And I definitely hope that we can move away from this. So I'll take the wait and see approach with Jay-Z and this NFL thing, like I said before, because I'm not convinced that anything good's going to come out of it. We will see. More from the NFL. Antonio Brown, wide receiver, used to be for the Pittsburgh Steelers, now plays for the Oakland Raiders. He's been going back and forth with a saga of his own. with his helmet. He was told by the NFL that there was a helmet that has been outlawed or banned, and that he would need to update his headgear. He has missed practices, apparently, and left the team facility in Oakland several times due to this helmet issue, even going as far as stating at one point that he was not going to play in the NFL if he wasn't able to wear the helmet that he wants to wear. And the NFL said, well, basically based on our studies, the NFL helmets that we have sanctioned to wear are safer for you, and the ones that we have banned are considered unsafe. And so Antonio Brown has opened up grievances against the NFL, lobbying them to try to get the helmet of his choice, which he is being summarily told no. And of course, if he decides that he's just going to quit and not play, he could do that too. I don't know what that would mean in terms of his contracts or how much money he would have to get back or so on and so forth. But apparently, the NFL has him over a barrel because he did, in fact, eventually capitulate, and apparently has a helmet that he will be wearing during the season. We don't know if we'll ever see him during preseason. He may continue to press this issue throughout the preseason, but I really have a hard time seeing him not playing simply because the NFL has told him that he has to choose from a few different helmets that they've sanctioned. The reason I bring this up, though, is because, of course, Antonio Brown is getting killed by everyone. He's crazy. He's a prima donna. He's a locker room cancer because he doesn't show up when he's supposed to because he doesn't want the helmet. He's a me-first guy. He only cares about himself, blah, 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 blah. And I think Antonio Brown is a person where I would question his mental health. The man showed up with a blonde mustache one week. He apparently, while he was in Pittsburgh, didn't show up for practices and then tried to show up in a game so he could play. And the coach and everyone sent him home saying, hey, you didn't show up to practice, you didn't call. His behavior seems rather erratic. He also missed time this preseason with a foot injury. He had frostbite on his foot because he allegedly wore the wrong foot gear inside of a cryo chamber, which is freezing cold. It's a treatment that they use. And I'm just looking at this person saying, okay, well, this person seems to fit that profile of a person who has been, adored by many. He's had access to anything he wants. He's somewhat spoiled by it. And at the same time, he is still trying to assert himself some measure of control against the NFL, even to the point where he didn't want to play on the team. He was with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He found a way to get off that team by causing disruption. This is what people have said. And now he's with the Raiders, and he's still causing disruptions, and now he is fighting against the NFL itself. A battle which he is going to lose, because no one has beaten the NFL yet, as far as I know. And all the talk about how dumb he is and this, that, and the other will probably continue. As a matter of fact, I don't see where, even if he comes out and plays lights out and you never hear another peep from Antonio Brown off the field or doing anything that people would question, I still think at the end of the day, people are going to look at Antonio Brown and say, well, this guy was a head case, he was a diva, so on and so forth, and blah, 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 blah. Now, he has said that he doesn't think that the new NFL helmets are safe because he can't see out of it properly the way he could out of his old one, and that endangers him. This could be true. I don't know. I'm not Antonio Brown wearing a helmet, so I don't know. But I think I'm going to take him at his word. And he may favor the helmet because he feels good in it and doesn't think anything else can protect him the way that the helmet he's used to does. I would say to Antonio Brown that you do have a job in the NFL, and when your boss tells you you have to do something, you have to do it. Otherwise, you need to leave the job. And what Antonio Brown, I'm afraid, is going to find out is much like Terrell Owens. The minute, and I mean the very second, that you are no longer able to perform at a certain level, you are going to be out. So Antonio Brown, they will tolerate you for now. You're a thorn in their side. You're an agitator. But you're not going to get away with it. The minute your game starts to slip, even for a second, the NFL will be done with you fast enough to make your head spin. So before anyone goes all out crushing Antonio Brown, just remember that ultimately he is a small fish in a big pond, and he's swimming upstream, doing his best to try to arrest some control over his own career. Because NFL contracts are largely unguaranteed. And the minute you start to slip, they will get rid of you. He knows this. So I put him in those categories with any of those players that, you know, hold out for contracts, so on and so forth. They need to do what's best for them. And I hope they're doing what's best for them in the long run. Antonio Brown. There was something else from the NFL that I wanted to get on today. I'm looking at players, and Andrew Luck is in the news. Andrew Luck has abruptly retired. Andrew Luck is a quarterback who was seen as the best quarterback prospect since John Elway. That's what I kept hearing people say. The year he was drafted, he came out in the same year as RG3. Andrew Luck suffered through some injuries in his career, even missing an entire season one year due to a shoulder. Andrew Luck now is suffering from a calf/ankle injury, and so painful for him that he has not been able to practice. I think he practiced maybe 3 times this whole preseason period and off-season program with his teammates, and then he abruptly retired, saying that he couldn't deal with the cycle of rehab, pain, and injury. Injury, pain, rehab. Injury, pain, rehab. A never-ending cycle. And I think most NFL players go through this. I think most NFL players are beating their bodies up on a week-to-week basis, and they're doing all kind of things to make sure that they can play the next week. Not because they're healthy enough to play, but because they know how to fool their bodies. You know, they know how to take a Toradol shot. They know how to just grind through the pain and block the pain out. They know how to sniff lines of cocaine so that their pain is numb and won't bother them until after the game. You know, things like that. Very common, I think. And Andrew Luck just said, hey, you know what? I'm out. Andrew Luck, this was, I believe, his 7th year going into the NFL, his 7th year. He came out in the same draft as RG3, and I thought that RG3 was a better player, more talented player. But RG3 also had an injury history, which derailed his NFL career, essentially. Playing till his knee exploded in a playoff game, and then, you know, the rest went downhill pretty quickly for him. Andrew Luck did not live up to the hype of being the best prospect since John Elway. He did not live up to the hype of being Peyton Manning's replacement in Indianapolis. He did not live up to the hype everyone said he would, being going to be a perennial Pro Bowler and win Super Bowls and so on and so forth. That never happened. But what I have noticed is that his departure from the NFL has been received as
somewhat of an evolution for NFL players, meaning NFL players are now saying, hey, you know what? I want my body over this money. So I'm going to go ahead and give you your money, and then I'm going to take my body, and we're going to get out of the NFL. And that's seen as some kind of great thing that NFL players are now doing. But I can remember, you know, I'm broadcasting here from the beautiful city by the bay in San Francisco, California. And here there's a team, the San Francisco 49ers, and when they were winning and going on a Super Bowl run with Colin Kaepernick, they had a player on their defense named Patrick Willis, a great linebacker, a middle linebacker, who by all accounts was a very good middle linebacker, a great middle linebacker, probably the best in the NFL during his time, and was on a trajectory headed for the Hall of Fame, which is a museum that famous NFL players, the best of the best, are invited to join. So many of their memorabilia ends up in the Hall of Fame. They get a gold jacket. They get this big to-do celebration for when they are inducted. There's a whole, you know, program around this Hall of Fame. And when once you're in the Hall of Fame, you're part of an elite group of players to be known as the best that ever done it. It's exclusionary. Not everybody gets in. Most players never sniff it. So Andrew Luck was supposed to be a future Hall of Famer, but he's not going to be there. Patrick Willis was on the trajectory of being a Hall of Famer. Patrick Willis also retired abruptly one off season, and he cited the fact that his body was being beaten up and that he wanted to preserve his health, so he was walking away from the NFL. Now, at the time Patrick Willis did this, I don't recall if he had any, and you listeners out there, someone can correct me on this, but I don't recall him having an injury that he was battling publicly at the time. It was just one day we got the news that he was retiring. And I remember people were stunned by his departure. And there were so many people absolutely hammering Patrick Willis. I mean, they were telling Patrick Willis things like, this guy is a bum. He's entitled. We never should have given him any money. We, as if people who are fans gave him money. We never should have given him money. This guy is a coward. He's a chicken. You know, all these guys want to do is take their money and run. So on and so forth. He needs to give all his money back. He's a bum. He's a loser. He's the worst thing on the planet Earth. Those were the kind of things that were being said about Patrick Willis during his abrupt retirement. Black man, middle linebacker for a successful 49ers team. Andrew Luck is not receiving that kind of blowback. I think one commentator made one comment about him saying that I read saying that, you know, his retiring was the most, millennial thing ever. I'm not quite sure what that meant. But largely everyone's come to his defense, Andrew Luck's defense. Oh, well, you know, these guys need to listen to their bodies. They're this and that. You know, they're beat up. He wants to preserve his quality of life. You know, he's not happy because he can't get healthy, blah, 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 blah. But I'm waiting to hear all of these people say, oh, this guy is a bum. This guy is selfish. This guy is all about him. He's not about the team because he just walked away. He should give his money back. He should give every dollar he ever earned back. He owes the fans. He owes the team. He owes this and that. I've never heard anyone making any of those kind of comments about Andrew Luck. And I'm going to tell you, this makes me highly suspicious. It makes me highly suspicious that no one has taken him to task for this. My stance on it is that players should retire if they think their bodies are in jeopardy. And players should know that your bodies are in jeopardy anytime you step on that football field. And if you've done it repeatedly, you have suffered some damage. So I can understand why somebody would leave, and I don't think that they should have to give money back. I think money should be guaranteed because it's such a violent sport.